This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast, your weekly dash around all things Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two, with me, Mark Clement. Centenary grounds, high-profile managerial changes, and sadly, early retirements all feature on this episode in the company of this man.
We've loved our journey. I think we've learned loads along the way. We try to get better every day, ultimately. I genuinely believe that coaching management is just about connection with people. So it's always to try to understand the person, to try to have a feel of what they need from you. And some need the stretch, some players need the support. I think all players need the care. And I think if you can show them how much you care before you show them how much you know, then that's a really good way to start the relationship. And I always think of them like my children.
It's the official EFL podcast. In his 14 years in football management, he's so far clocked up 5 promotions. Is Danny Cowley en route to another? His Portsmouth side currently sit on top of Sky Bet League One. What does a manager know at this point in the season, Danny?
I think he knows that it's very early days, that we've worked hard to get into a good position. Really proud of the group. Obviously, we come together quite late at the end of pre-season. We had to work hard in this transfer window. Obviously, coming just to the end of the transfer window now. But no, we've worked hard to kind of try to accelerate the process of bringing the players together, both on and off the pitch, trying to build relationships and the partnerships and trying to work towards the game idea. But we understand that we're still a million miles away from where we want to be. But obviously pleased with the start, and it ultimately gives us a foundation to hopefully be able to push on from.
Does it kind of help to underpin beliefs that you might have had that you're onto something? And as unimportant as the table is after 5-6 games, does it help to establish a momentum and a belief in the squad as well?
Well, I think it definitely helps to give a belief to the group, both individually and collectively. We've worked really hard to recruit this window. I think we've been pleased with the way the window's gone to this point. We've been intelligent probably with our trading as well. We obviously traded Marcus Harness, who was a significant player for us last year, one of our best attacking players, a fantastic player. But we decided with a year left on his contract, it probably wasn't going to be possible for him to extend that contract. And we made the decision to allow him to go. We got a good deal, probably a little bit more than we anticipated. And that's helped us be able to bring Colby Bishop to the group and also some of the other players. So, yeah, we've worked hard with the recruitment. And then we've worked hard both on the pitch and off the pitch in terms of, I think first and foremost, when you bring as many new players in as we have this window, is to try to bring them together as people. And once you can bring them together as people, then you can start to work on the training pitch and start to build the little relationships and the understanding that is so important if you're going to get a consistent level of performance.
That's really interesting because I wanted to know how you'd adapted yourself as a manager over the years, because obviously at say Concord Rangers you're part-time, you're still working as a PE teacher, so I'm guessing one of those areas is your management of people, because you're dealing with professional footballers now, some of whom are on quite decent salaries, certainly in comparison to what your average man in the street gets.
Yeah, I think so. I've had the pleasure of managing in 8 of the top 9 divisions, and my journey's been probably quite different.
Amazing achievement, mate, isn't it? I mean, that is that in itself, you know?
Yeah, I think it's something that we're really proud of, Nikki and I. It's quite a unique sort of pathway, really, but it's one that we wouldn't change for the world. It's, I suppose, allowed us to make mistakes and take learning away from the public eye, particularly in the early years. I always have so much respect for like Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard, who finished their playing career and then start their management career at the very highest level. That must be an unbelievable challenge for them and for them to be able to do that so successfully, credit to them. But for us, no, we've loved our journey. I think we've learned loads along the way. We try to get better every day. Ultimately, I genuinely believe that coaching management is just about connection with people. So it's always to try to understand a person, to try to have a feel of what they need from you. And some need the stretch. Some players need the support. I think all players need the care. And I think if you can show them how much you care before you show them how much you know, then that's a really good way to start the relationship. And I always think of them like my children. They're always in the forefront of my mind. And it's always to try to help them, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch as well.
Do the terms of reference change, or are the same common denominators there to when you were dealing with a guy that had just fitted Mrs. Smith's boiler and then come to training on a wet Thursday night? I mean, are you pretty much still applying the same principles, or have you changed a lot? And in terms of how you bring a group together, you know?
Yeah, I think I always have unbelievable respect for non-league players, for the boys that have to work all day and then come to training or travel the country to play games. It's two jobs, no doubt. And I always have a huge respect for them. And I always follow the non-league boys that then come into the football league. I always do that with real energy and a real enthusiasm, because they always have, like I said, my utmost respect. I think managing in eight divisions, I think, it kind of see the evolution of man. They get bigger, stronger, more powerful as you go, more athletic as you go through the divisions. Obviously, technically, tactically, a little bit more talented maybe, but still I'm always attracted to the players that love the game, that have that energy and enthusiasm for a game that I love, because I think if we can find those qualities in the players, then Nicky and I have a natural alignment with them, and then the relationship kind of works. So yeah, it's been a privilege really to be able to work with so many players. I mean, I think this is my 15th season. And yeah, interestingly, it used to always be my challenge to get, of course you want to win on a Saturday, but it was also my challenge to get the boys that were in non-league into the football league. And I think we had 35 that left us during our non-league days to play in the football league. The belt, we obviously had a promotion with Lincoln. So a number of them come up from the non-league to the football league, but yeah, 35. And now I'm in the football league. The aim is to get them into the Premier League. And it was brilliant to see Lewis O'Brien, who we gave his championship debut to at Huddersfield, Harry Toffolo, who obviously we had at Lincoln and we had at Huddersfield, both of them playing in the Premier League. Lyle Taylor, who's at Nottingham Forest, we're hoping he's going to get a Premier League debut. He started with us as a 17-year-old at Concord Rangers. Believe it or not, I haven't had anyone who's gone from the non-league to the Football League and into the Premier League, but I'm hoping Lyle can do that at Nottingham Forest. I think... Yeah, and then obviously the boys like Emil Smith-Rowe and Trevor Chalobah, and last year Gavin Bazunu, who we've had on loan, who are now all playing in the Premier League as well. So, you know, and I think we've got some players in our group now who will have that aspiration, and we'll try to do all we can to support them in that journey.
And just to go back to bringing a new group of players together, do you do, I don't know, storytelling sessions? Do you encourage the cliques that are forming to break up a little bit? Do you encourage people to come out of their comfort zone and not just sit with those they already know? Do you tinker about with places on coaches, places in the dining room, etc.? Or do you let evolution take place?
No, we're always trying to create opportunities for the players to build the relationships. I think human connection takes time. It's something that you have to absolutely work on. Something that we try to work on in the training ground every day. I think we have the bonus here at Portsmouth that we're on the road a lot. Every travel is an overnight stay ultimately, because we're on the beautiful South Coast. So we do get a lot of time together, and then it's just about using that time wisely. But we do a number of random things here, really. I actually spent some time on my pro licence with the guys at Sale Sharks. And actually on the day that we graduated, we sat and we had dinner with them, and they were... incredible, really, some really good ideas, and we've stolen a few of those. Obviously, they have over 50 professionals, and I just love the culture in rugby union, that they obviously only play Saturday to Saturday, but when they will pick the team on the Monday, the 15 that are playing for obviously the lucky ones. The other 35 plus, their whole responsibility during the week is just to support the 15 that are playing and give them the best possible chance of being successful on the Saturday. And the way that they're able to give themselves up for the team and put the team first, I find incredible. Yeah, it's something that we're working towards. I think one of the boys' key values here is we call it team first. We have three team values that are really important to us, and that is one of them. That we understand that in football sometimes there'll be moments of individual disappointment, but never to allow that to affect the team. Yeah, we've had some good fun in pre-season. We went to Spain, we spent some time doing some water sports and some different activities around kayaking and paddleboarding, and yeah, we had some good fun there. The boys were building balloon towers the other day, which was a bit unique.
Hold on a second. Let's strip that back a bit. Balloon towers. What, you down Tesco's? You buy a big bag of party balloons, you do it at the training ground? Or is there actually a sort of away day activity centre where somebody's actually providing that as a paid facility?
No, we don't quite get that privilege here at Portsmouth. So we have to think outside the box and do it ourselves. But no, in pre-season, we do a lot of double sessions. Sometimes in the season, we do double sessions. So between those two sessions, when we're recovering the players, is just to use our time well. And yeah, they got a pack of 20 balloons and some masking tape. And it was they were in departments. We had the goalkeepers, the defenders, the midfielders and the forwards. And it was the team that could build the biggest tower in 10 minutes they had. And yeah, it's just nice to see them work together. It's nice to put them in a different situation. And you learn about them in those moments for sure.
Yeah, the other thing I guess we've got to talk about is just managing expectations, both of owners and of supporters. And I can't remember the exact wording of your statement pre-season, but it was along the lines of what a ferociously important factor supporters are. You were obviously trying to align everybody, that they are an absolute asset to you, to invigorate, to get the boys going, to lift you in difficult times and to take the roof off when things are going well.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think everything we do is always for the supporters. I always think for every football club, it's the supporters that define the club. And we're very fortunate here to have an unbelievably brilliant support base. I mean, we were playing the Papa John's Trophy last night against Crawley, and we took over 1,000 supporters. We had more away supporters than there was home supporters. And that just says everything about Pompey support. I think at Fratton Park, anyone that's played there knows it's just a special place to play football. And we're privileged to be able to play there every other Saturday. I always think the difference between the best support is that, you know, and we certainly have that at Portsmouth, is that they're not spectators. I sometimes watch the Premier League and I watch supporters of Premier League clubs, and it's like they come almost like it's the theatre, and they're just coming to spectate and for the players to put a performance on that they can then watch. Whereas I think the difference is, and certainly we feel this here, is our supporters have such an influence and impact on the game that they can really affect the outcome. They talk a lot about the Fratton end being able to suck the ball in the goal. And certainly at Fratton Park, we never feel like it's 11-11. Yeah, I think we've managed in the last 15 games to win 13 and draw 2. Had a really good home record for quite a period now. And we're we enjoy playing at Fratton, that is for sure.
How do you manage negativity? Might be an individual or a little cluster of people, you might hear it from behind the technical area. I mean, I know Richie Wellens had a little bit of a spat that ended up on social media regarding, I think there was an ironic chant about his team, and he kind of picked up on it and invited supporters to the training ground to actually watch and to bring everybody together like that. Would you attack any negativity head on in such a way and say to somebody, go and get those three from round there and get them to come and meet me on Tuesday afternoon and I'll tell them exactly why I did X, Y, and Z? Or do you just have to let it go?
Well, I think communication is always really important, isn't it? And you're always, I think, in my position, trying to communicate to all the different people at the club, and certainly to be able to give clarity to the supporters about the way that you work, for them to be able to understand what you're trying to do, I think is really important. Because if you can convey that, then the supporters have a much better understanding, and then are much more likely to give you that little bit of time when maybe it doesn't work as well as you would like it to. So, yeah, communication for me is always a really important part of this job. We're really lucky. Our supporters are really intelligent. They're really, really good supporters. I mean, we have Joe Rafferty, who I say is a manager's player because he's a right back. He does the basics unbelievably well. He's a really good, really good defender, 1v1 defender, stops crosses, real team player. Sometimes in lesser educated support bases, his work might go unrecognised. It doesn't. The supporters really have a feeling for Joe. I think they have a song for him and they see him as a really important player. And that always is great and can sometimes tell you the intelligence of the support base that you're working with.
Danny, you've kindly agreed to join us a little whistle stop across the three divisions. I want to start in the Sky Bet Championship. Fixtures this coming weekend. Friday night is West Brom against Burnley. Saturday, 3 o'clock, it's Norwich at home to Coventry. Watford are at Rotherham. QPR are at Swansea. Sunday, lunchtime kickoff is Reading against Stoke City. We've also got Hull against Sheffield United later on Sunday afternoon. And then the small matter of the Tees Weir Derby on Monday night as Borough take on Sunderland. There's an ominous look at the top of the Sky Bet Championship table when you start to see that despite various degrees of spluttering so far, you've got Norwich, Burnley and Watford all nestled in the top six as we record this week's episode of the Official EFL podcast.
Yeah, I think we're seeing this year after year now, aren't we, with the clubs going down from the Premier League. Obviously, the parachute payments certainly support them and help them in their bids to get promoted straight back up again. I think it is something that maybe we need to look at long term, possibly. But no, they're top teams, aren't they? I mean, you come down obviously with a Premier League group. If you can keep most of that group together, you then get the parachute payments, and then you can add to that. You have a significant advantage to the other championship teams. There's no hiding place for that. And why I say to maybe look at it is just that I always think that we want competition to be fair, don't we? I think when the competition is fair, then we have the most exciting leagues. So, yeah, maybe it's something for us to look at. I understand why it is in place, but we wouldn't want to see, I think we've seen in recent years, haven't we, the teams getting relegated, being straight at the top of the championship. And yeah, it is something for maybe us to consider. But no, it'd be exciting. The championship, I think, is just a brilliant league. What a fantastic league. I'm so proud of our football pyramid. It's for me the best football pyramid in the whole world. Nowhere else do you get step five and step six teams carrying 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 supporters every game. This just wouldn't happen anywhere else in the world. And I think we should be really proud of the depth that we have to our pyramid and keep doing everything we can to make sure we support the clubs in the lower divisions and help them, because for me, this is what makes English football.
You are the living embodiment of the pyramid. A couple of other things I want to talk to you about. Actually, one just sort of trivial one, but I just wondered, Watford beat Borough, Vicarage Road centenary game. They wore a black and white striped kit, which was one that replicated the very first game at Vicarage Road, right back against Millwall on the 30th of August, 1922. How's a manager with all that stuff? I mean, obviously there's commercial responsibilities and stuff, but suddenly you're used to playing in yellow and you got to play in a black and white striped kit for a one-off game at home. Does that take a bit of managing or not?
I think we all have our superstitions. I think for us, we love playing in the Pompey blue. I'm not sure I'd want to change that at home, if I'm honest. I know a lot of players can have superstitions as well. So especially if you're on a good run, like we are at home at the moment, I don't think you want to, you always like to try to keep the routine as consistent as you can. No, it's interesting. I always remember back to, do you remember that Manchester United game against Southampton when Man United, I think they played in their third kit and Alex Ferguson changed the kit at half time because he said the players couldn't see each other.
It was that grey one, yeah. Wasn't it? It was the grey one that they played in.
Yeah, it always sticks in my mind that, and just typical Alex Ferguson really, isn't it? That just his attention to detail and the fact that he has the courage to make that kind of decision mid-game. So I don't think I'd want to change kids, but I understand why clubs do commercially, and certainly Watford had a good reason to on yesterday evening.
Yeah, we've had a couple of managerial changes in the Championship. Michael O'Neill out at Stoke City and Alex Neil leaving Sunderland just 4 weeks after he signed a new contract to come in. Were you as shocked as most people seem to be that Alex made that move?
Yeah, I think I was. I didn't see it coming. I mean, Alex did an unbelievable job at Sunderland at the back end of last year. I think he picked up a team in a good position, if I'm honest. I think, you know, you don't often pick up a team that are already in the playoffs, but certainly he gave them some real defensive organisation. I think they become much harder to beat. He created a sort of relentless consistency, which he's able to do at all the clubs that he's managed at. Yeah, they obviously got promoted through the playoffs, which was an unbelievable moment for the Sunderland supporters. I think, you know, it's a huge football club, and I watched the game. I went to the game, Sunderland Wickham at Wembley, and you can really feel the size of the club when you go to a game of that magnitude, and you just look at 80,000 people at Wembley and maybe 60,000 plus Sunderland supporters. It shows you what a huge football club that is. He obviously had started the season well in the Championship, but for whatever reason, he felt that his future would be better elsewhere. And that, no doubt, is a real loss to Sunderland, because they're a juggernaut of a football club. And once you turn that juggernaut round and get it moving in the right direction, which I think he did, you can really build some momentum. That he chose to move to Stoke. And Stoke, again, a brilliant football club in itself, but a challenge for any manager. I think there's been a lot of good managers that have gone there in recent times and not been able to find the answer. So it'd be interesting to see how that all unfolds.
Well, Alex has said the ownership was arguably the key factor as to why I came here, because I do believe they do give you backing. They give you time to make sure you can get the job done. And I don't think you can ask any more than that as a manager. And I guess it's something you can relate to with your ownership there, who has got a more longer term strategic approach to things in Michael Eisner and the Tournant Group.
For us, Michael Eisner was CEO of Disney for over 20 years. You don't achieve that position without having some business acumen, that is for sure. And it's been a privilege to get to know him and his family and his support team. I think, you know, from the moment they've come in, their support for us has been unconditional. When they took over the club from the supporters group, it was very much with the proviso that they would run it in a sustainable way, that they've stuck to that to those principles. We've kind of changed their recruitment strategy. I think historically it's always been to try to sign players that can cope with the pressures of playing for Portsmouth and playing at Fratton Park. Kind of tried to change the narrative really and try to sign players that are ambitious enough to play for Portsmouth. And that's meant that we're signing a lot younger players. I think now in our squad, we have 12 that are 21 and under. So we're really young, but that brings a real energy and enthusiasm to the training ground every day. We've got a lot of young people that want to get better. And I think for Nicky and I and the rest of our support team, that, you know, we feel really privileged that we're able to work with these young players and help them. And I think accompanying those young players, we've been able to add some really good senior players. And yeah, I've been lucky enough to have 5 promotions. And in all 5 promotions, the two things, it's always been the spirit and the togetherness. Absolutely, it's been key to that. But the other part is the senior players and always having really good senior players. And I think if you can get to that place, then they can have such an influence on the younger players.
Just to square the circle, Tony Mowbray is the new Sunderland manager, replacing Alex Neil. He takes over on a 2-year contract, left Blackburn at the end of last season when they opted not to offer him a new contract, said he needed to improve his work-life balance. Actually, you know, obviously, he's an absolute Middlesbrough legend. There is the rivalry with Sunderland, so he's picked his words very carefully, but I thought this was wonderful. The players must understand what they are fighting for, because they're the standard bearers for the city, and win, lose or draw, we must ensure those who come to watch us see a team that gives everything in every game. You've got to take an early preemptive strike sometimes, haven't you, when you are crossing those boundaries between rivals?
Of course. I think Tony has forgotten more than I know about football, lived and breathed football all of his life. Did a brilliant job at Blackburn Rovers, him and Mark Venus. an outstanding job. I think probably could have been supported there more. I think the way that he brought a young group of players through will set Blackburn up to have an awful lot of success going forward. Just a fantastic job that he did there, and just a really good fit for Sunderland, obviously a North East man. I think it will fit Tony at this stage in his career. And he's obviously a vastly experienced manager at that level. And I can imagine going into Sunderland having just been promoted, some of the players living the Championship for the first time, changing managers so early on, that his competence, his experience, his calm demeanour will be very, very important in this early period for Sunderland.
And finally, from the Championship, sad news, actually, the Bristol City defender Nathan Baker has retired at the age of 31, hasn't played since been taken to hospital after a clash of heads at Sheffield United in November of last year. That injury came a month after he suffered a concussion during another game against West Brom. And the club say, having assessed his progression over a period of 9 months, Nathan's been advised by medical professionals that to carry on playing at professional level would represent a significant risk to his ongoing and future health. I mean, listeners might remember, played for Villa, more than 100 appearances, Lincoln, Millwall, and then moved to Bristol City in the summer of 2017. And these are really sad words, Danny. Football's been a massive part of my life from a very young age, so this has not been the easiest decision for me. It kind of underlines just how precious life is and how our bodies are and how life can change in a couple of moments.
I always think this for every footballer. I just feel very sad for Nathan at this time. I only had a non-league playing career, but I love playing football. It was always the first thing I thought about when I woke up in the morning and the last thing I thought about before I went to bed. I remember my career ending at 28, 29, and you kind of feel like you're almost in mourning, and you feel almost embarrassed for saying that. But ultimately, that's how it felt when there was something that you love doing and it's taken away from you. So I can really empathise with Nathan, and it just shows you how precious your football is. And I say to the young players every single day to attack it like it's your last, to make the very most of it, because it's just a short career, a really short career, and you have to try to enjoy every moment, attack it with energy and enthusiasm, and keep trying to be the best that you can be, because you never know when this gift, and it is a gift, is going to be taken away from you. Just send our very best wishes to Nathan and his family. On Saturday, I actually had my first concussion sub. So Michael Morrison picked a nasty head injury up in the first minute. So we had to use a concussion sub at that point. And I think it's good for the game and good for the welfare of the players that we have made some real big inroads into looking after concussion and the protocols that we now have in place, both on match day and then in the recovery process, have been significantly improved in recent years. So credit to the FA, the EFL, and obviously the medical profession for putting that in place.
Yeah, and as Danny says, good luck to Nathan in whatever he decides to do next in the next stage of his life/career. Into Skybet League One, Saturday's fixture. Second place Ipswich are at Accrington. Morecambe still looking for a first win, travel to Bristol Rovers. Derby against Plymouth is 6th v 5th. Burton still looking for a first win, travel to Oxford United. Danny's Portsmouth, the leaders, at home to Peterborough United. Sheffield Wednesday, who are currently 4th, play against Barnsley. And again, there's always a lot of talk about the division and the big guns. And then you are all limbering up there or thereabouts near the top of the table.
Yeah, I just think you just read out the fixtures there, Clem, and wow, it's what a brilliant League One is this year. So many big clubs. I think there are some right at the top of the division, the likes of Sheffield Wednesday and Ipswich and Derby County have been able to be really aggressive with their recruitment, and good luck to them. I think we saw last year how difficult the division can be, how competitive it is. Anybody can beat anybody in the league, and I think that's why it makes it so exciting. You never quite can predict the results.
Sky Bet League 2, this Saturday's fixtures then. Rochdale picked up a first point, but looking for a first win. They travel to Carlisle. Hartlepool also looking for a first win. They're at Colchester. Crewe Stevenage is 7th v 5th. Doncaster in 3rd. Entertain Mansfield, the leaders. Leighton Orient are at home to Tranmere. Northampton against Barrow is 6th v 2nd. And Salford against Crawley is 4th against another team still looking for a first win. Rochdale have appointed Jim Bentley as their new manager. They also said in a statement when he was appointed, they are the first club in the north of England to be fan-owned and fan-led. That's a lot of experience Jim Bentley's got. Have you come across him, Danny, during your time at Lincoln?
A number of times, yeah. Great guy, Jim. Larger than life, brilliant character. Always enjoyed spending some time with him after the games. And yeah, I just think a fantastic appointment. Did a brilliant job at Morecambe and then obviously went to AFC Fylde. And it's great to see him back in League Two doing what he does best. And I think a really shrewd, intelligent appointment for Rochdale. And I have no doubt that you'll slowly but surely see Rochdale move up that division.
Crawley, I know you were there in the Football League Trophy. I wondered, as a diehard football man that had come from one particular route, what you thought about the club, which is now has been taken over in the last year by US cryptocurrency investors, have appointed analytics expert Chris Galley as their director of football. Now, listen, he comes from Matthew Benham, the Brentford owners' betting organisation. But it's a very different approach. So how does it dovetail into the football? Will football people be receptive to that? Analytics are a big part of the game. But to have somebody in that position, Danny, with that background that is in such an influential role, where does that sit with you?
I think always to be open-minded for us. I think ultimately you're always looking of ways to improve, and ultimately you're trying to improve performance. And if you can find ways to do that and find that consistent level of elite performance, then it's to be open-minded and move with the times. I think, you know, we use a lot of analysis ourselves, both in terms to understand our performance, to develop our players' performance, and also with recruitment. We also use a lot of data and a lot of statistics. I'm not governed by them, but for us, I think that they can give you a really good understanding of your performance. Sometimes they can just reaffirm what you've seen live. Other times they can bring things up that maybe you didn't see, and then you can look into that a little bit more deeply. And ultimately, I think to improve performance, first you have to understand it. So any tools that you can use to understand performance, you should absolutely utilize. I think it's great that people from different walks of life are coming into the game. And I think to be involved in elite sport, you've obviously had success in your career at some point. And to understand what your attributes are, what your strengths are, and to use them to help an organization can only be seen as a positive. And I think it's the clubs that are utilizing these kind of tools that have complete clarity over where they are today, have that self-awareness to understand where they are today. They have a clear vision of where they want to go. Once you get that start point and that destination, then the stepping stones become much clearer, and then you can put that clear process in place and really live by it. And I think if you can do that consistently, and the lines of communication are clear and job clarity is clear, then you can have some real success. I think the clubs that get caught up with the emotion then and have lots of ideas but never quite see anything through, have kind of vagueness in terms of job role, and not, you know, people not always staying in their own lanes, then this can create confusion and chaos and ultimately failure. So yeah, for me to be successful, absolutely use these tools, have an understanding of what you're using them for, know their strengths, understand their weaknesses, and yeah, good communication and good clarity.
Nevertheless, Crawley are one of three teams, as I mentioned, still looking for that first win. And I was just looking at what's happened with Scunthorpe in the National League, won their first game, but then have lost five in a row. It's cost manager Keith Hill his job. I mean, it's a desperate battle to stay in the EFL, is it not? You obviously have had experience of bringing a club in the opposite direction when you picked up Lincoln and transformed them and turned them around. But goodness gracious me, it's dog eat dog at the bottom of the Football League at the moment.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you look at the size of Lincoln as a football club. It had been relegated for six seasons, hadn't finished above 13th in the National League. So when you do get relegated, it can really suffer. And I remember when Nicky and I joined, and it felt like the club was still in mourning, even though it had been relegated 5 years ago. It still felt it was mourning the day it had been relegated. And it was really to try to create a system reset and to then be able to look at ways of moving forward. But yeah, you know, to be in the Football League and to have that central funding is so important, particularly in the world that we live today. So no doubt the teams at the bottom of that division will be looking nervously over their shoulder. And I just hope that in these moments they're able to not get caught up in emotion and just try to make really intelligent, calculated decisions, stay really process driven. And if they can, no doubt they will find themselves out of those two relegation places.
I want to take you right back to the start of this conversation. What's the one thing that you have done throughout those 14 years so far in management? What's your number one principle that you do in exactly the same way as you did when your management career first started and are still doing it today, tomorrow, will be doing it? Fingers crossed at the end of the season when maybe you'll be back in the Championship.
I think caring for people, I think that would be it.
It's a very straightforward and simple answer. Danny, it's a pleasure as always. We really appreciate you joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks, Clem. Great to speak, mate.
That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Danny Cowley. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.